clouds. They provide the world with relief from the blazing sun, bring water to dry lands, and blanket the world at night from the frigid cold of space. And while there's nothing sinister about clouds, sometimes it's what they bring with them that can create chaos. From thunderstorms to hurricanes to foreign objects hidden within these puffy aerosols, clouds are able to roll in without warning and roll out without a trace. For your consideration, imagine a small, forgotten town in the middle of a desert experiencing a thunderstorm. You stand outside your ranch, watching the storm soak the otherwise scorched earth, when you notice something strange poking through the storm clouds. You grab your binoculars and discover a large structure reminiscent of a castle sitting among the clouds. Amazed, you grab your cell phone, but the phone is already ringing. You answer the call and hear a man's voice speaking in a language you've never heard before. Your immediate instinct is to hang up, but for some reason, you can't. The voice goes on speaking in the strange language for several minutes. Then, the phone hangs up. Once the storm ebbs, you decide it would be a good time to take a drive into town where you can grab a bite to eat at the local diner. After you finish your meal, you walk out to your pickup, pull out the shotgun you never knew you had, and begin to shoot up the diner that was filled with friends and children. Before the local authorities arrive, you walk up to a victim that is injured, then you vomit into the victim's mouth. Later, when authorities ask why you killed all those people, people you knew and loved, you reply by saying that you swear you didn't, and you swear that you have no memory of what happened. Months later, the victim you vomited into walks into a grocery store and opens fire. This is what took place in a small town across central Australia during the wet season. I'm Agent Kai, and I've decided to make my reports for Lyles in the form of a podcast. My hope is that you, dear listener, will discover the truth of this world and open your eyes to it. The town of Mirage is located in central Australia. However, by the time this report is released, there's a good possibility that the town will be wiped out from all maps and memory. You see, while I was wrapping up my assignment in Canada, a local intelligencer, a park ranger from Alice Springs out on patrol, was approached by a terrified resident from the nearby town of Mirage. This resident claimed that people in that town were killing each other in violent ways for no reason. The intelligencer, always weary of hearsay, decided to check out this frightened resident's claim. When they ran reconnaissance, they were horrified to find that the resident's claims were true. The intelligencer contacted HQ on the spot. Seeing as how I was in Melbourne, Cameron reached out and filled me in on the details. A few weeks after the incident that took place in Forêt-Montmorency, and while Blade and his team worked on gathering intel on the bridge, the portal discovered in Stagfrost Site B, I decided it was best to travel to Australia to see what Sand was up to here. I also recalled Osiris, the immortal assassin, making their way here as well. I hadn't noticed it before, but something was going down on this continent and it had to do with the Gentleman Unknown. I was sure of it. I had spent 2 weeks in Australia, going from Sydney to Brisbane to Perth and Melbourne, in hopes of finding Osiris. My reasoning was that if anyone on this planet could help me with gaining knowledge on Montaigne, the Gentleman Unknown, it was Osiris. But my search was fruitless. Therefore, when Cameron called to inform me about the incident in Mirage and told me people were killing each other without a reason, it made me wonder if the immortal assassin was up to their old ways again, only now they were working small towns instead of cities. "It may be bigger than that, Kai," Cameron said. This intelligencer also reported that the Mirage resident claimed to have seen a castle in the storm clouds before everyone in his town went mad. "Interesting," I said. "I wonder if this has anything to do with Montaigne." "It's possible. With everything that's been happening, I wouldn't be surprised." Cameron typed something on his end. "According to local weather reports, there was no storm over Mirage, but our intelligencer says otherwise." "That's so," I said. Well then, I guess I'll have to go and take a look. Be careful out there, Kai, Cameron said. In all my time here at Lyos, I've never come across anything like this Montaigne character. Blade and his team were having success with the so-called bridge, but I have a bad feeling about what lies on the other end of that thing. So do I. Keep me updated on the bridge. Will do, Cameron typed away. I'll send you the specifics on the resident. He paused. Again, be on guard, Kai. I know you think Osiris might be a reliable source of information, but it's possible that they're in cahoots with Montaigne. I agreed with Cameron. The call ended. I then jumped into the Nissan Patrol I had rented in Melbourne and started the day-long drive toward Alice Springs. According to Cameron, the resident from Mirage, 21-year-old Brendan North, was staying at Alice on Todd in a one-bedroom apartment. It was here that I introduced myself as Juan Preciado, a meteorologist from the University of Melbourne School of Geography, Earth, and Atmospheric Sciences, studying unusual weather phenomena. Dr. Preciado, thank God, Brendan said. Yeah, the park ranger told me you'd be stopping by to see me. I'm just glad someone is willing to believe me. I'm told you saw a castle in the clouds, is that right? Brendan nodded. Yeah, I'm not making that up, I swear. I believe you, I said, but I'm going to need you to tell me what happened to you in Mirage. Fair enough. Brendan North was an aspiring psychologist working as a server in order to pay for college. The diner he worked at, the Wild Sky, was owned by a middle-aged man Brendan called Beryl Jarrell, on account that he was rotund with a protruding gut from too many pale ales. He had just finished losing an argument with Beryl Jarrell about working that weekend. Brendan had planned on taking Kate, his girlfriend, camping to experience a romantic night under the stars. But thanks to Beryl Jarrell, that wasn't going to happen. After sending the dreadful plan-breaking text to Kate, Brendan went out onto the floor to serve his next customer, Chris Jackman, a retired grazier who lived a few miles outside of Mirage. Brendan had known Jackman since he was a kid and actually liked the man. Hey, Mr. Jackman, Brendan said. How's it going with you? It's going okay, Jackman said, smiling. Got some crazy rain this afternoon. Brendan peered out the windows. Really? I haven't seen any around here. Yeah, I can see that. Jackman laughed. must be one of those strange rains. He shook his head. The weather sure has been acting weird recently. According to Brendan, there was nothing out of the ordinary that afternoon. Jackman ordered his usual lunch, tomato soup with a grilled cheese sandwich and two cups of coffee, and then spent some time watching the television. When he finished his second cup of coffee, he paid his bill and went on his way. Except this time, Brendan said, Jackman didn't go about his way. Instead, the old grazier walked back into the diner with his shotgun and started opening fire. Brendan watched in horror as Chris Jackman, the man who had taught Brendan how to ride a horse and how to take standard measurements, shot the people who had been kind and loving to him without expression. It was almost like he was in a trance, Brendan said, because Jackman's eyes were blank. As the old man continued his massacre, Brendan ducked underneath the counter and waited for the shots to end. When 2 minutes passed by without a shot echoing throughout the diner, he slowly poked his head over the counter. He saw Jackman leaping over the corpse of Beryl Jarrell and getting on top of a woman who was groaning in pain. Brendan's heart sank more than it had already done when he saw her. It was Kate. She had been grazed on her leg by one of the shotgun shells. Brendan had been under the impression Kate was in Alice Springs, but then recalled she said she would be stopping by in the afternoon to have lunch with him since their weekend plans had derailed. She must have walked in just as he went into the back and Jackman walked in with his silencing weapon. Brendan was frozen. All he could do was watch as Jackman got on top of Kate and vomited a green liquid into her mouth. Then, the old man leaned back and glanced around the diner. He began to scream for help, acting like he had no idea what had happened. At that moment, Brendan forced himself to move and run over to Kate. Jackman grabbed Brendan by the arm and asked him what the hell happened. Brendan didn't say a word, but rather decked the old man in the face, Then he grabbed Kate and carried her out to the diner, screaming for someone to call the police and an ambulance. "My God," I said. So Jackman pretended not to know what he did. "That's just the thing," Brendan said. He claimed to be innocent to the last breath. "And the crazy thing is, I believe him."
"Is that so?"
Brendan nodded.
"Yeah, especially with what happened next."
With all the chaos that had taken place in the diner, Brendan went on to say, the image of the woman dressed in red had escaped his mind. Brendan explained that while Jackman opened fire, the woman in red stood outside the diner watching the massacre take place with a smile. Of course, this memory didn't make itself known in his mind until he saw the woman in red a second time. Brendan had stayed by Kate's side at the Mirage Hospital after her surgery. The doctor said that Kate was very lucky to keep her leg, that she just needed time to recover now. Also, the doctor said that when they pumped her stomach, they didn't find any green or foreign liquid in her body. It was during an evening when Brendan had returned to Kate's room after running home to take a shower and get fresh pair of clothes on that he saw Kate standing up and looking out the window. It was raining hard, and lightning lit up the sky like a forest fire among the clouds.
"Kate," Brendan said. "Baby, you're okay."
He ran up to her. "I don't think you should be standing on your leg so soon."
"Te darío el mío corre la mía anima lágrima."
Brendan was taken aback for a moment. He never heard Kate speak another language before. As far as he was concerned, Kate was born and raised in Australia and had never exposed interest in languages. He stared at Kate as she peered out the window like a child fascinated by a phone screen. He said her name, tapped her on the shoulder, and received no response. When it looked like she wasn't going to respond to him, Brendan turned his attention out the window at the storm. For the first few seconds, he didn't notice anything out of the ordinary. But just when he was about to look away, lightning flashed like fireworks across the night sky, illuminating the thick clouds. And it was during this moment that he saw a large structure reminiscent of a castle floating through the storm clouds. Brendan watched this fascinating sight agog. His first thought was that he was imagining the castle. But the more he looked, and the more lightning lit up the sky, the clearer the medieval structure became. It floated without sound, appearing and disappearing as the rain clouds rushed past its towers and spires. Then, as quickly as the castle had appeared, it vanished back into its cloudy cover. Rubbing his eyes, Brendan wondered if what he'd seen was real. He didn't know if he could believe his senses, but that didn't matter at that moment. What mattered to him was Kate, and she was looking at him bewildered.
"Are you okay, Brendan?" she said.
"Kate, are you okay?"
"Yeah, I feel fine," she smiled. "I mean, my leg hurts, but other than that, I'm okay."
She hobbled back over to her bed.
"What exactly happened to me?"
Brendan was worried, especially after Kate said she couldn't recall speaking in a different language. Truthfully, Brendan said, he didn't know what was happening anymore. Through all the chaos he had experienced, he wasn't sure what he had actually seen. So, chucking up all the strange sights to stress, he decided it best to put all that weirdness behind him. That was a mistake. A week later, while grocery shopping at Woolies, Brendan noticed that Kate was acting odd. She became distant the instant they entered the supermarket. Without saying a word, she left Brendan's side and proceeded to the back of the store where the butcher was slicing up meat. Kate, nimble as a cat, hopped over the counter and grabbed the butcher's knife laying on the counter, slit the butcher's throat, and proceeded to run around the supermarket slicing people left and right. Brendan didn't know what to do. Therefore, he called the police and joined the crowd of people running out of the supermarket. Outside, he saw her again. Not Kate, but rather the woman in red. A large smile was stretched across her face. Her eyes were fixed on the large window where Kate was seen running across the store, chasing an elderly man and stabbing him repeatedly while laughing. The woman in red ran her long, thin index finger along her lips and licked it as she continued watching Kate murder innocent people.
Not long after that, the whole town went insane, Brendan said. People were stabbing, shooting, beating, killing each other in any way they could think of. It was like they were infected with some violent virus or something. Whatever they had, I didn't want it. So I got the hell out of there. What did this woman look like? I said. Brendan thought for a moment. I remember her hair being violet in color, her expressionless eyes amber. Tall and lithe-figured. To be honest, she was terrifying. I wrote this information down. And did you notice the cast from the clouds during your second encounter with this woman? Brendan nodded. I did. I know it sounds crazy, but I swear on my father's grave, I'm telling you the truth. I believe you, I said. In fact, this castle in the sky you witnessed may have been a reflection of your own town's buildings. A reflection? That's right. What you saw was a Fata Morgana. Never heard of that. A Fata Morgana, dear listener, is a superior mirage, an optical illusion named after King Arthur's half-sister and powerful sorceress, Morgan Le Fay. She was known to deceive and create illusions that could draw men and women to their deaths. She once tried to kill her brother by gifting him a crown that, when placed on the head, would burst into flames and engulf the wearer. And because of the fact that Morgan Le Fay is associated with the mystical island of Avalon, King Arthur's resting place, who some say is located in Sicily, her name was given to describe these strange and fascinating illusions. These types of mirages distort objects and twist them into unrecognizable shapes in the sky. On average, a Fata Morgana is seen on the horizon of large bodies of water. This mirage can make a ship on the horizon appear like it is floating in the sky. There are tales of 17th and 18th century sailors reporting strange sightings of a ship that could float in the sky and then disappear. This ghost ship has come to be known as the Flying Dutchman, a legendary ghost ship that is believed to never make port and doomed to sail the oceans forever. In 2015, residents of a city in China reported seeing a floating city above in the clouds. If you Google floating city above China, you will see the images and YouTube videos of this surreal phenomena. While many believe the strange sighting above China to be nothing more than a Fata Morgana or some kind of secret NASA project, the truth is that it could be something else. What that something else is, well, that is the question. I would normally say that that floating city above China was nothing more than a Fata Morgana or a top secret NASA project, but I would be lying. Truth be told, that city caught Lyos' attention and has remained unsolved to this day. And now that Brendan was bringing up this information, all I could do was wonder if that city in China and this castle in Australia were related. I informed Brendan of this information, minus anything related to Lyos. Well, I'll be damned, Brendan said. I didn't know such a thing existed. That might explain that weird castle in the clouds, but what about that woman in red? I feared the castle Brendan saw in the clouds wasn't an illusion, and the woman in red was somehow connected to it. You're right, I said. Well, I'll have to go check it out and see what I can find. What? You're not really thinking of going there, are you? I nodded. Christ, you're crazy. He paused and looked at his phone. Well, if you're going over there, then I'm going with you. I have to see if Kate's alive. How is it that you made it out of Mirage untouched? I said. Hell if I know, Brendan said. Probably because I got the hell out of there before anybody touched me. He grimaced. But I should have stayed. I should have tried to help Kate somehow. I left. I just left her. There wasn't anything you could do. You made the right choice by leaving and seeking help. From my observation of Brendan thus far, I could tell the kid was smart and resourceful. He didn't look like the type of guy who would run away from danger, especially if someone he cared about was involved. His micro-expressions, the downward glances he gave every time he mentioned Kate's name, the quick grimace at the mention of his townspeople killing each other, and his furrowed eyebrows when he spoke about leaving the town gave him away. But he wasn't an idiot either.
He must have known that whatever was going on in Mirage was beyond him and that he needed help. Maybe, he said. But if Kate is... well, if she is, then it's my fault. Let's not jump to conclusions. We'll check out Mirage and see what we can gather. What exactly are we going to do? My phone rang. We're going to... I glanced at my screen. It was Victoria. Hey, you, she said. Guess where I am. Turn around. I did, and found Victoria standing a few feet from Brendan and myself. Victoria, I said, standing up. What are you doing here? Surprise, she smiled. I landed in Adelaide a couple days ago, and now I have a couple weeks to myself. I've always wanted to come to Australia, and since you told me you were here, well, I said to hell with it. Why not surprise you? We embraced and kissed. It's always good to see you, I said. I'm glad you decided to surprise me. Victoria and I, dear listener, have continued speaking to each other via texting. Soon after my arrival to Australia, I informed Victoria that I would be here for a few days. She had told me that she was going to Jamaica. A clear lie meant to fool me. It worked. How'd you find me here? Victoria chuckled. It's not hard to find Alice on Todd. At that moment, I realized that I told Victoria a lot of things. She's right about that, Brendan said. See? Victoria said. I'm Victoria Lakatos. Nice to meet you. Likewise, I'm Brendan North. He stood up. Are you also a meteorologist? Victoria glanced at me and nodded. Yes, that's correct. I received his text to meet him in Alice Springs. And what has my esteemed colleague planned for today? We're going to Mirage, Brendan said. Dr. Preciado seems to have a plan. Yes, Dr. Preciado is good at that. I shook my head. Well, Dr. Lakatos, I suppose I'll catch you up to speed. Given the information Brendan had provided about Mirage, I suggested it was best to drive into Mirage at sundown, where it would be difficult for anyone in town to see us coming. A large portion of the afternoon was spent memorizing the layout of Mirage. Brendan knew the town like the back of his hand. Victoria and I, however, didn't. Therefore, while Brendan went to the local hardware store to get the equipment I asked him to get, Victoria and I studied the old maps of Mirage. It was during this time that I filled her in on what we were about to do and, once again, warned her just how dangerous this trip could become. And once again, Victoria said she understood the danger but still wanted to come along. Your life is fascinating, Kai, she said. And while I find going on your monster hunter adventures terrifying and fun, the truth is, I just want to be with you. I smiled. And I with you. But listen, there's nothing fun about my job. We must find time where we can be together monster-free. We got lucky last time in the Philippines. At least, I knew what we were up against. Tonight, I don't have any clue what we're walking into. And in this line of work I'm in, walking into uncharted waters is incredibly dangerous. So if you come with me, you don't leave my side for a second. Ooh, so I get to stick close to you? Victoria said, leaning closer to me. I like the sound of that. We kissed. The sun set in a blazing array of red and orange that tinted the darkening sky and shadowed the far-off mountains. By the time we arrived in Mirage, the moon was up and the stars were peppered throughout the night. The town's lights were off, and an eerie silence lingered in the air. We drove through the main streets where half-eaten corpses lay. Then, we pulled into a Coles Express to assess our situation. We stepped out of the car. There were bodies scattered all over the gas station, some in cars, others laid out on the ground. How is this possible? Victoria said. Why isn't anyone coming out here to help? How is it that this isn't on the news? I've been asking myself that same question, Brendan said. Try as I might, no one will listen to me. You and Dr. Preciado are the first ones to actually come out here. It's possible someone or something is keeping the events taking place here in Mirage a secret, I said. I wonder if what's happening here is an experiment. An experiment? Brendan said. I knew it. You two aren't meteorologists, are you? Victoria frowned.
well... No, we're not, I said. Far from it. Then who are you? It's best that you don't know. But listen to him, Victoria said. Trust me, it's better that you don't. A rustling shattered the silence of the town. It didn't take long to find the source of it. The half-eaten corpses were beginning to move. Others were standing up and dragging themselves toward us. Holy shit, Brendan said. This can't be happening. Brendan, do you have the flashlights I told you to get from the hardware store? Yeah, I have them here. He opened his duffel bag and took out three flashlights. Here. I pulled the three necro lenses I had taken from my go bag in the SUV and replaced the flashlight lenses with these. Then I handed them to Victoria and Brendan. Take these, I said, and only turn them on when the undead are within 10 feet of you. You want us to give the undead a spotlight? Victoria said. These flashlights are now fitted with necro lenses, I said. These lenses will burn the flesh of the dead within minutes. Don't mind the stench of burning flesh. My encounter with the undead in Colombia, dear listener, had taught me to carry a necro lens in case I was faced with the undead again. As the undead inched their way toward us, we used the flashlights to burn the dead to ash. My God, Victoria said. Can we get out of here? I nodded. Yeah, let's get back into the truck. Kate! Brendan said. Standing out on the main road was a young woman covered in dried blood. She reached her hand out and, in a low voice, called out Brendan's name. Brendan took a few steps forward. I had to pull him back. What are you doing? He said. It's Kate. That's her. We have to take her back with us. That's not Kate, and you know it, I said. You and I both know that. No, that's her. She's dead, I said. You said so yourself. Brendan turned to me. What? I never said she died. Not directly, but in your story, you mentioned that you left her in the supermarket. What happened to her there? Police were called. Did they let a woman who was on a killing spree live? Brendan dropped to his knees. No, it can't be true. The laughing of a woman pierced the night. You're so clever indeed, the woman said. Oh, I can't wait to see your body dripping with blood. Montaigne said I could taste it. Kate's corpse was flung in our direction with vehement force. The body hit the SUV, making a deep dent in the trunk. Victoria screamed. Standing where Kate's corpse was on the road was a woman wearing a long red robe. She had her long dark hair tied in a way that gave one the impression that she had horns instead of hair on her head. She sauntered toward us. Victoria aimed her light at the woman in red. The light just exposed her powdered white face, dark amber eyes, and her impossible smile that stretched from ear to ear, exposing razor-sharp teeth. You work for Montaigne, I said. Where is he?
You can address me as Lacrima, she said, her smiling growing wider. And I don't work for Montaigne. He is my lover, my pet, and I his.
She examined Victoria.
Oh, you are beautiful, Victoria Lakatos. You have good taste, Kai.
Lacrima licked her lips.
You look so tasty.
Where is Montaigne? Lacrima aimed her finger up toward the sky. Cautiously, I peered up and saw a large castle floating in midair. There wasn't a cloud in sight. However, it seemed as if the castle was beginning to emit some fog from underneath it. Within seconds, clouds were beginning to spread from the castle.
You won't reach him on this plane, I'm afraid, Lacrima said. But if you'd like to meet my love, then you'll have to cross the bridge.
She licked her lips again.
I can send you there by stealing your heart and soul. Will you be a good pet and give those to me?
I won't lie here, dear listener. At that moment, I was afraid. Afraid for Victoria, Brendan, and myself. Lacrima was not like any other of the creatures I had ever faced in my career as a Lyle's agent. There was something horrifying about this woman. Maybe it was her blank eyes or her razor-sharp teeth, but I think it was the way she thought. There was no good behind those eyes. There was only chaos. My only goal at that moment was to get Victoria and Brendan out of Mirage in one piece. "What did you do to Mirage?" I said. Lacrima stared at me with that wicked smile of hers.
"I absolved it. Mirage should consider itself the first town in the world to be so," she chuckled. "As we speak, the world is now turning on itself. Lustful hatred spreading like passionate love. Soon the world will consume itself, beginning with that large wonderland. A world of yummy corpses, rivers of tasty blood. My own realm, my lover's promise."
While Lacrima went on her diabolical soliloquy, I realized her dark amber eyes were sensitive to Victoria's light. Every time Victoria aimed that shaky light at Lacrima's face, she turned her head to the side, avoiding the light. That gave me the idea of using a heliosphere, a powerful burst of sunlight that could turn night into day for several minutes. I had one in the SUV's trunk. "Your plan is to have the people of the world kill each other," I said, making my way towards the SUV's trunk. "Why do that?"
"Oh, Kai, you disappoint me." Lacrima lowered her head. "Montaigne said you were observant and a great listener."
"I heard you." I stood in front of the trunk that it received from the corpse made it difficult to pop open. I had to fiddle with the release lever a bit. "What I don't understand is why you want to turn this plane into your own. Can't Montaigne create a new one for you? I mean, he created his own according to Sand." Lacrima glanced at me.
"Sand. He was a wonderful addition to our family. But now, thanks to you, he has nothing but grains in the ground." She sighed. "I don't want my own plane created. This one is already here the way I like it, with people hating each other for no reason."
She ran her fingers down her face.
"Killing each other due to their stupidity."
Her fingers ran down her throat and onto her chest.
"Celebrating war and strife."
Her fingers ran down her abdomen.
"Ah, and worshipping money and drugs like a god."
Her fingers worked their way down toward her nether regions.
"It's all so stimulating."
Lacrima's face changed. Her smile vanished in the blink of an eye and was replaced by a sneer.
"Humans are pathetic. Such weak-minded animals. They're only good for entertainment and food. This world of yours, Kai,
will be my feeding ground. I will consume all of humanity once they obey my command and give their hearts and souls to me."
As Lacrima spewed her insanity, I managed to get the SUV's trunk open. I grabbed a heliosphere, a golf ball-sized weapon, and threw it into the night sky. Lacrima roared something fierce when the light spread throughout the darkened sky for miles.
"Get in the truck now," I said.
Victoria rushed into the truck without a second thought. I had to grab Brendan and throw him into the back seat. I put the SUV in gear and floored it out of Mirage. As I shifted gears, I noticed the dead that were spread throughout the road were beginning to stand. Others, who were already walking, were lifted into the air and were hurled in our direction. I had to swerve several times to avoid getting hit too much by the dead bodies. Unfortunately, the SUV couldn't swerve fast enough. Therefore, several bodies hit the hood. I had to turn on the wipers and washer fluid to get rid of the blood on the windshield. Once we were out of Lacrima's range, I guess we were out of her range because the rain of bodies ebbed. A man in a trench coat and top hat appeared in the middle of the road. I was going too fast to avoid him. His face was pure shadow, despite the truck's headlamps. His eyes, two shining stars that glimmered in darkness. The truck went right through him. But as this happened, time seemed to slow to a snail's pace. That's when I heard his voice for the first time.
"I'm waiting for you, Kai."